today with Caitlin Day and Benjamin K. Donlin, who are both volunteers with the Western Regional Advocacy Project and the Stop the Sweeps campaign, talking Monday the 21st, which is National Homeless Persons Memorial Day. And we just, I think the stats were just released that 113 people died this year, which was a 23% increase over last year. Sounds like houselessness itself is growing exponentially.
It's also just the beginning.
Definitely be more, especially when the eviction moratorium is up.
Tell us a little bit about the organizing work that you've been doing around the sweeps.
Stop the Sweeps is a coalition of homeless-led groups and supporters in Portland. Been around for about a year now. Our first demand was for a moratorium on sweeps, and things have definitely changed a lot ever since COVID hit. And we've kind of divided into different working groups, working on policy, doing mutual aid.
So I'm remembering last year that Debbie Ann Beaver was swept, essentially. She had died shortly before the sweeps came through.
I think the impact is immense when people have their survival gear taken away, their medication, their identification, things that keep them warm, healthy, puts them in a very precarious position. With the pandemic happening, it also puts them exposed to the virus. It's a very life-defining sort of thing to do to somebody, to relocate them, dislodge them, and to throw their stuff away.
Yeah, and a lot of times that stuff includes ID that they need for, you know, essential survival services. And it also oftentimes includes medications like, remarkably, insulin, high blood pressure medications, medications for people who are already pretty medically fragile.
Especially when it comes to things like syringes, right? When you have diabetes, those things are immediately thrown away because of the suspicion that it might be drug related, right? And then heart disease medications get thrown away. The success rate for retrieving property is very low. I've only heard two success stories out of the hundreds of people I've talked to.
In an article from Portland Mercury last year, when they interviewed the Homelessness and Urban Camping Impact Reduction Program, which is the entity that does sweeps in Portland, they admitted that the majority of the things they collect from sweeps, they end up throwing out anyways because people don't come back to claim them. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, I think the main reason is just that it's not super accessible to be able to get there and retrieve your stuff.
Right. And then once you're there, you have to basically provide proof of who you are and that it's your stuff. But that's kind of hard to do when all the proof is inside your stuff.
Is it fair to say, too, that when you experience a loss of on that level, people have trauma behind it? A lot of times it's the psych meds that have been taken, right?
Yeah, I think it's a really big understatement to say that sleep deprivation has a profound and large impact on being houseless and what it does to your mental state, your emotional state, every minute of every day.
I mean, we know it's been used as a torture tactic, and we know it is going to significantly impair people's ability to problem solve. Fair to say that it's not getting them any closer to any place where they can live inside, right? So what is the function of those street sweeps?
I believe a lot of it has to do with real estate speculation. And the way you get real estate value to go up is by improving your walkability score, improving your livability score. That's one aspect of it. And I think that has a lot to do with how neighborhood associations approach it. But there is another aspect where businesses are impacted. It comes from this 1980s model of looking at Midtown, and the economic stimulus of downtowns has to be a certain aesthetic, a certain sort of way. The marketing and the cleanliness and livability of everything has to be just right in order to have the best sort of economic impact. And the way that they approach that is by hiring private security and sweeping out all the houseless people.
I mean, is it fair to say that the kinds of complaints that get made about why sites have to be swept could easily have been addressed by simply providing porta potties and other kinds of sanitation and garbage pickup in the way that you would for housed people, right?
Yeah. But additionally, I remember, was it Metro put out a study saying that most of the outdoor trash actually comes from housed people, and that they often just dump their trash at houseless camps because they feel like they can just get away with that. But yeah, you're right. Housing is the number one solution for homelessness, and additionally, the number one solution for a great deal of the medical issues, whether physical or mental, that are exhibited within the houseless population. It's always going to be housing. It's never going to be direct services as much as a house.
And we know that the housing and urban development budget was slashed, pretty draconian cuts, in about 1978, 1979 through 1983, right? And it's just never been restored.
Yeah, they slashed it by a good 80%. Thanks, Reagan, Reaganomics. But there's been a lot of things that have happened since then as well, such as the rise of business improvement districts and how they have basically pushed onto cities to criminalize homelessness and to make it a crime to sleep in public, to be in public in just about every major city. And so the rhetoric has definitely changed and shifted, but the methods of removing people have not.
It seems fair to say that this whole situation is something of a setup. You withhold sanitation, you withhold garbage pickup, and then you use that as a pretext to continually punish people and move them along so that problem is not in your own backyard.
This is really just the inability of Portland and other municipalities of dealing with their own problem of gentrification and racist classes behavior. They're just unwilling to address it.
Portland Police takes up the most of the city budget out of any other department. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of units considered specialty units within the Portland Police Bureau. Mm-hmm. And they do have several units that are specifically focused on homelessness, which is something that we definitely advocate against, because it's a way to justify increasing the police budget.
If every time we see a sweep, we also think about that in terms of tax dollars used to basically move along people who are often, you know, really quite literally on their last legs. And I just want to remind people of, you know, Debbie Ann Beaver. They'd gone through, they'd swept, they'd taken her medications, including, you know, medications that she needed to survive. And then a couple weeks later, they swept through again and they discovered that she had died in her tent, which, you know, you could argue was a foregone conclusion of having taken her medication. How can people support the campaign?
If you want to get involved, we definitely encourage people to email us, stopthesweepspdx@gmail.com. And we can definitely get people into different working groups. In general, we also just tell people to pay attention to what city council has been doing, see what's up on the agenda. For instance, Rapid Response, which is a company that the city contracts with to do sweeps, their contract was extended for 1 year in 2019, January. So that means that their contract is most likely up for renewal again. So that's something to pay attention to and ideally advocate against when that's up for renewal, as well as just in general, consistently reminding city council that we don't want sweeps and to stop the sweeps.
Do you know what the annual cost of the rapid response contract is?
It's $4.5 million.
Okay, so we're saying that basically we could take that $4.5 million that's directed toward rapid response and all of that funding could instead go into direct services for houseless people or to housing development.
Yeah, if we look at the success of the C3PO camps and the way they've been able to house nearly 180 people over the pandemic at a fraction of that cost, they have a profound impact if we really invested into those sorts of models.
Guests today have been Caitlin Day and Benjamin Donlan. They're volunteers with the Western Regional Advocacy Project. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Desiree.
Yeah, thank you.
Next up, Chelsea Ratzlaff is going to be speaking with Raven Drake of Street Roots about C3PO, mutual aid, and community care.
So I am speaking today with Raven Drake, who is the Ambassador Program Manager at Street Roots. Raven is also the former Medical Program Coordinator of the C3PO Coalition. Hi, Raven. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So just to get started, what is the C3PO Coalition?
So the C3PO Coalition stems from a proposal that myself and the executive director of Street Roots, Kaya Sandro, on alternative camping. The city bought into it and joined them along with 48 other partner groups in this coalition, joined together to build these safe shelter camps for the most vulnerable to COVID that we had at the time. And we were able to house in three separate camps. Two of them are affinity camps, which means they are identified to one group. On the east side of the river, we have the LGBTQI camp. And across the street from it, we have the BIPOC camp. And then we have the largest of the three camps on Northwestern Gleason, which is the mixed population.
Can you tell me a little bit about how those groups were formed?
Well, the coalition had a healthy mixture of all three of those populations of people. And so when we came together, and it came quite abruptly, from the proposal being picked up to the first camp launching was only 16 days. Mm-hmm. So it came together quite quickly, and we all pitched in resources from our organization, know-how, knowledge of the street, knowledge of communities out here. And everybody came together to really build out these camps with one dream and desire of creating a safe shelter place and a model to use other places in the city. It became a large labor of love for a great many of us. Myself and Victory, who is actually the service coordinator for Dignity Village, Victory LaFleur, became the two full-time staff members of this camp. I headed the medical and communications programs, and she was the admin.
I'm hearing you say that you're really adhering to the communities that are already established on the street and then just coming behind them and supporting them.
Yeah, we had this application process that allowed all of them to apply, and we had a great many people who had existing street families who were accepted into the camp, and the vast majority, if not all, of the family moved in at one time together. They camp around each other. They still have that deep sense of community, of family, which was very important to us. We also changed it from a more shelter model to a village model, where allowed the campers to manage themselves. Very quickly in the process, the staff that had been cobbled together, volunteered together to run these, stepped aside and allowed the campers to create their own spokes council, make their own rules, and govern themselves. They now take care of their own admissions into the camps, rulings for administrative reasons on, you know, someone needs disciplinary or needs to be put out. And they're self-sufficient in managing themselves. And currently we're working with the camps. They actually just got winterized shelters that have heaters in them just a few weeks back. And we're now working with Pear and other area kitchens to build small kitchen setups there that people can use.
In the wake of protests that erupted after George Floyd's murder by police in May, C3PO was targeted in viral videos alleging that the camps were quote unquote Antifa breeding grounds where rioters were being housed. Raven, can you speak at all to these allegations and the impact they had on the camps?
I was actually there for most of it as it happened. The East Side camps, the LGBT and the BIPOC camp were the ones targeted. And a very right-wing group said on social media that these were training grounds for ASSA, which was completely inaccurate. This was just a home for people who hadn't known a home before. And so we were on high alert, and nothing really ever came of it. I mean, there were some people, a little bit of picketing kind of thing, but they never erupted to violence, which I was thankful for, that they didn't have to live through that. But there was a lot of fear in the camps when that was found online, that they were being targeted and that they would be attacked. And it was a great worry to the people who formed this coalition, who are still part of the coalition supporting these camps. You know, these people in these camps are not just some campers that we serve. These are our friends. These are family. These are people who are near and dear to us, that have become near and dear to us through this process that we've gotten to know. We actually ended up, just for their safety, emptying the camps and putting them up for over a week in a hotel to give them space out of there in case something were to happen. Thankfully, it never did, but that's really, I feel like that was one of the shining moments where it showed the difference between a shelter system and a, you know, independent village model, where we had the ability to inject more humanity into it and safeguard people, not just our property.
Right. And C3PO actually preceded the eruption of protests in May, right?
Yep. C3PO was established end of March, beginning of April, and the first camp actually launched on April 11th.
And can you speak a little bit to the primary medical issues that you're seeing on the streets?
So the biggest problem that we've had from the very beginning is a problem that's been around much longer than COVID, and it's the lack of, you know, showers and restroom facilities, sinks, and, you know, to combat this virus, you have to be able to stay clean. And that is a struggle out here on the streets. And so medical has been always one of our primary focuses here. So we've really focused on hygiene, on medical resources, bringing people masks, sanitizer, basic medical needs, water, food where we could. But we prioritized cleanliness, you know, COVID-related items to protect themselves, masks and hand sanitizer, over all things. It became our mission to, as much as possible, to work our way through the city and be able to do for people and give them a fighting chance to do for themselves of staying healthy. I think it definitely led our group and many others who are doing outreach and on that same mission led to the reason why we haven't seen a huge population of houseless individuals who got COVID. I think that has really helped to keep the You know, we armed them with information, what the virus really was, how it spread. We worked with them to understand why there should be social distancing. We've worked with houseless individuals on how to stay clean, how to take care of themselves, on arming them with numbers and resources to combat themselves if they get sick. And so it became our mission to just spread knowledge and resources wherever we could while the city was shut down.
Can you speak a little bit to, you know, the response?
At first, you know, there's a lot of misinformation on the streets. It's not like most of the people on the streets don't have internet access or a phone. And so news travels by word of mouth. And, you know, it's like the old game of telephone that we all learned to play as kids in kindergarten. By the time the story gets back to you, it's nothing to what you started it. Mm-hmm. And so the first order of business that we had, and probably what took the longest the first few months, was just simply combating the misinformation. And we printed tens of thousands of pamphlets giving correct information, distributed them freely through the streets as much as possible. We tried to educate people on what this virus really was, where it had come from, how it transferred itself from person to person, what surfaces it lived on, how long it lived there, the reasons we have to do these things. And so at first, the information we brought them was met with skepticism, as things are on the street. And slowly, people started to watch it with their own eyes and really read what we were bringing them and listen to what we were saying. And it took a little time, but we started to really make people understand the correct information. And at that point, we turned a corner where we were able to garner more help out of them in protecting themselves.
Right. And of course, the misinformation is a national problem. The work that you're doing in educating people on the streets is a good model, I think, for us on a wider scale as well.
The ultimate dream is that the ambassador program becomes not only houseless individuals on the street who can become a part of it, but that community partners, people in the community who've heard about this program, people who maybe have read about the program or heard from a friend about what we're doing, who get interested and want to get involved, to have the ability to come and volunteer and be an equal member of the ambassador corps and go out into the city seeking to improve communication and improve the quality of life citywide.
Is there anything else that you want people to know?
I think from the ambassador program, I would just leave one seed of knowledge with your listeners, and that is, it's never too early or too late to make a new friend. And the easiest way to change the life we live in and what people suffer through indifference is to take a few minutes of your time and simply sit down and say hello to somebody. You never know who you're going to meet on the streets. And just remember that the people on the streets are equally as scared of you. I've heard this a lot, where they see the rows of tents and they get scared for their safety. But I'm here to tell you, as somebody who started this year living on the streets and did all these things with the camp while still living on the streets before I got into housing, that we're equally as scared as the people who lived in houses, because those were the people who called and supported sweeps. Those were the people who called the police on us. And so there is misinformation and fear across the board. And so I just ask people to follow their heart and, you know, maybe say hello to someone. You never know if you might be meeting your new best friend.
Great. Thank you so much for talking with me today, Raven. And thank you for all of the work you're doing.
And thank you for this time to talk to you. I very much enjoyed it.